You're listening to SBS News.
Despite a fragile ceasefire holding in Gaza, the Strip's medical system is still under immense strain. In this episode of Weekend One-on-One, SBS's Tyser Cutsey has spoken to an Australian doctor who'd recently returned from the region to his home in Melbourne.
Mohamed Awad is my full name. I am a neurosurgeon based here in Melbourne, Australia. Most of my patients and certainly all my friends and family just call me Mo, so you're welcome to call me Mo.
Fantastic. Well, can you tell me about your background, how you came to be, volunteering in Gaza?
It's a great question. So since the start of the war back in October 2023, it's something I've always had in the back of my mind to help those in need, those that have been unfortunately caught up in this war. The option came to me via the WHO through PANZMA, which is the Palestinian Australian New Zealand Medical Association, that they were in need. Initially, they were in need of orthopaedic surgeons, general surgeons. Neurosurgery wasn't up on the agenda for what was required. And then when it was, the WHO had put a policy to say that you had to go there for a minimum of 1 month, and I couldn't unfortunately afford that time. I then got a call basically at the beginning of February this year just to say they've relaxed that to 2 weeks and they were now desperate for a neurosurgeon specifically. And so I answered the call and next thing I know, I was on a plane on the way there.
Wow. So was this your first time volunteering in Gaza?
First time, yeah.
What were your first impressions when you got into Gaza? Can you talk me through your first impressions of it?
The journey there was really quite different. So you had to go through many checkpoints and all the checkpoints you go through sort of puts you in the mood, as it were, that you're going into a war zone. It's very much like that. And then as soon as you get in there, you get told by the United Nations that you're on your own and you're there on, you know, your own will, and the safety profile is not 100%. But you understand that, of course, being in a war zone. First impressions, you know, of course, you get to see the landscape, which is the stuff we're seeing on social media and TV, which is, you know, all the buildings that have been damaged and collapsed. You get to see a lot of people struggling on the streets, you know, with the way they're dressed and what they look like. And some of them look malnutritioned and, you know, there's not much availability of water and all these things I'm thinking of from a medical point of view as a doctor.
As a human, though, were you prepared to see what you did see?
Like I say, you see it so much on the TV and social media, but it's very different when you see it in person. It really is quite confronting. It's almost like going into one of those movie sets and seeing something from a movie set. It's almost surreal seeing that much level of, you know, that level of destruction. I don't think you ever prepared for it until you see it. It's quite confronting.
Yeah. And so then you've had that interaction with the UN that you mentioned, and you're in Gaza. Which hospital did you work in, and what were the conditions like in those hospitals?
So most of the operations I did were primarily out of what's called the EGH, or European Gaza Hospital, and that was because the operating theatres were probably in the best condition out of all the others. The others were all substandard. In fact, the European Gaza Hospital, probably by Australian standards, would be also substandard, but it was the best that they had. I did, however, go to all the other hospitals and consult, see patients there, sometimes through into the very late evening, because that was what was available. So I did get to see Nasser Hospital, the Baptist Hospital up north, what's called the Public Aid, which is the replacement for the Al-Shifa Hospital, the famous Al-Shifa Hospital. And also Al-Aqsa Hospital, which I consulted at a couple of times as well.
And going around those different hospitals in Gaza, what was the level of need like that you saw?
Really quite intense. All the hospitals have, you know, loads of people inside, both as inpatients, outpatients, people hanging around the hospitals with nowhere else to go. So sometimes people just almost living on the grounds of the hospital in tents. But in terms of the level of care of need, you almost get pulled in different directions just from people understanding who you are and what you're doing there. So I was getting people just walking up to me saying, hey, we heard you're the international neurosurgeon. Please come and see my father, brother, sister, mother. And I'd just get pulled in different directions. And they were all people with genuine needs.
How does that impact you then, knowing there are so many people asking for your help and you can only do so much? How did that impact you?
Yeah, it's a very good question because you feel like you'll never get through everybody in the time you're there. I was there for 2 weeks and I did absolutely everything I could to get through most people. And there were two or three times where I'd operate through to late night just to try and get through the cases. But I knew I won't get through everybody. And so I made sure that everybody had at least a follow-up with a local neurosurgeon to get some kind of level of care.
And you've mentioned a couple of the hospitals there that have become so famous. How has the war sort of impacted the medical system as a whole, though?
The medical system there has had to have essentially a revamp. So most services have been moved to smaller clinics, makeshift clinics, and setups that have been really done by international NGOs. So UK Med and various other NGOs from all around the world, America, Medicine Sans Frontières, you know, Doctors Without Borders, they've set up clinics all over to counter the need for the places that are no longer functioning. And so we saw those all over the place and we helped with a few as well.
And then so for your sort of your tasks working as a neurosurgeon, how were they sort of impacted or impeded by the situation that you were working in?
Oh, the biggest impact was the fact that there was no MRI scanners on the whole Gaza Strip. So pre-war, the Gaza Strip had 10 MRI scanners. Since the start of the war, two of them are no longer functioning, but they can't bring people in to fix them. And the other 8 have been actually damaged through the war. So there's no MRI scanners. As neurosurgeons, we operate based mostly on MRI scan, seeing them and seeing scans of brains and spines, but not having that available meant that we were having to make decisions based on CT scans, and that was really, really quite difficult. Operating on young kids with brain tumours and just only having a CT scan was really, really quite challenging.
And can I ask you what the majority of the cases were that you saw? What were sort of the most part of the cases?
Yeah, so a lot of them were people with tumours that had been left for so long because they had no access to healthcare during the last sort of, 15 to 18 months. So tumours that had been left that are much bigger now and people were much more symptomatic. Spinal conditions, again, that were left, chronically, so people had, spinal cord compression and were very symptomatic. And of course, I saw trauma as well. So, gunshots to the head, gunshots to the spine, and also the remnants of what we call blast injuries as well. So shrapnel injuries, etc. So I've seen a variety of things.
Is there one case that sort of sticks in your mind as the most serious case that you remember?
There were a few. I'd say there was one chap that had a bullet in his head, but had survived that surprisingly. But the bullet in its presence was causing harm, and so we took that out, and that was a late night case. And he actually did very well and ended up going home relatively well. There was a young 3-year-old boy with a brain tumour that his mum couldn't get access to healthcare until I arrived, and we got him a CT scan and we ended up operating on him, and that ended up being a 4 or 5 hour case, and he's thankfully ended up doing well, but he still needs to unfortunately leave the Gaza Strip because we don't have access to an MRI scanner there, and so he needs further imaging and probably further surgery.
And of course this impact to electricity in Gaza has also been such a big issue in recent days. How would you say that is impacting the medical system across the Strip?
Yeah, so that was another thing I noticed, of course, arriving there, was that everywhere I went, if you didn't have solar panels on the roof, you had no electricity and you were essentially using the light on your phone to do stuff. That obviously also means no heating, no hot water, etc. So living standards are pretty bad. But the electricity in the hospitals is still present. So from a medical point of view, I was still able to function. It did cut off a few times, and then the generators kicked in. The problem with the generators kicking in is that some of those generators are old-fashioned generators that run on fuel, and fuel's now not available either, given that the aid was recently stopped. And so, you know, it's challenging. But from an electricity point of view specifically, it was okay. There was also the fact of the water element, because the desalinization plant, the electricity was cut off to that. So fresh water, which is obviously required medically for multiple reasons, was also scarce just before I left.
And maybe just a bit more broadly, how important do you think it is for medical professionals such as yourself who are not from Gaza to go and assist in this effort?
Greatly so. I didn't realise how much of an impact I would have to the local community until I was there. The local doctors there are fatigued, they're run down, and they're also unfortunately not as skilled, which is not their fault. They've never left the Gaza Strip. They're not allowed to in most circumstances. So they haven't had that international experience. And so providing sort of Western experience is really, really quite useful to the locals and to the doctors there, because while I was there, I was also upskilling them and helping them. So absolutely paramount for people from first world countries to go and help all first world countries, and I'd strongly recommend it.
And now that you're back, yeah, just how are you feeling? What are your thoughts about being back in Melbourne after just having spent that time in Gaza?
Yeah, I think leaving Gaza was bittersweet. I mean, obviously the sweet was coming back to see the family and missing all the family and your friends and getting out safely. The bitter, of course, is leaving behind all those people that you know that you couldn't help, you know, all those queues of people outside your clinic that, you know, are really looking to you for that extra care and attention. But like I say, my plan is to keep in touch with the local doctors there, and help them through the internet, as it were, with cases, discuss cases with them, talk to them about maybe ways to do it, different ways to proceed with different patients' care. So I will try and maintain my level of attention to those patients from a distance. Everyone knows that, you know, this war is never great for anybody on any side of the war. I think these poor people have been impacted significantly, certainly from a medical point of view, as well as multiple other facets. And, you know, I would hope that they would hopefully get the care that they need and the aid brought in that's required to at least get them to a level that they can survive, and function at a minimum.
Okay, Mohammed, thank you so much again for speaking with us.
Thank you very much.